guys. My name's Jen. I'm not practicing the third step very well. I'm having a hard time turning this over. Speaking is not my favorite thing to do, but I'm grateful to give back to Narcotics Anonymous. I'm just going to tell you my story. That's all I have today. I'm going to share my experience, strength, and hope. I started using at a really young age. I was 12 years old when I put something in me, and it started with alcohol and led to heroin. I mean, it just progressed, and I used for 12 years, like half my, I'm 26 now, and my clean date's December 29th, 2010. I'm coming up on 2 years, and that's only by the grace of God. And, you know, I used for half my life. I didn't know any other way. That's how I was brought up. My mom used. I used with my mom. Everybody around me used. That's what I thought was normal. And, you know, growing up was tough for me. I didn't know where I fit in. I never felt like I belonged. I had a lot of trauma. I'm not really going to get into all that. That's not really important. But I went through a lot of trauma. And, like, I used it as fuel to use all the time. And I used it to fuel my addiction and use it as an excuse to use. And using was the only thing that took me outside of me. And eventually, like, the drugs stopped working and my problems were still there and they were magnified. And, like, I used against my will for a long time, and I remember counting the times that I wanted to be clean and I couldn't stop. And it was just real painful, and I can count, like, all the people I harmed along the way, my family, I lost all my friends. Like, I only had friends when I had something. Like, that's the only time I had friends. Nobody wanted to be around me unless I had the drugs. And, like, I didn't even know what real friendship was. I was never able to acquire a real friendship where they were there for you no matter what and practice selfless acts. I didn't have that in my life. I lost my best friend when I was 10. That was my dad. He got drunk one night and shot himself, and that was like the end of my world. I lost it. Like, I didn't know what it was like, and I got real resentful when I would hear people talk about their dad, and I didn't have that experience. I grew up in bars, you know, that's all I knew. And I lost my best friend at a young age, and it was real traumatic for me, but I never knew how to cope because I always put something in me, and I never knew how to cope, and I never knew how to grieve. And I just used for a long time. That was the only thing I knew how to do. And I remember when I was like 17 years old, I started going to the methadone program. And I thought that was a way out for me. You know, I didn't know what methadone was. I knew I wouldn't be sick if I took methadone, but I had no idea that if I didn't take my methadone, I'd be sicker than I was from being sick from heroin. Like, I didn't know that at the time. I thought it was a way out. So I was on methadone for like 2 years, and it was worse than heroin, because, like, I started doing other drugs. I started substituting. I was never really clean. I started, it's like, ooh, I can smoke crack now, and I can do this, and I started doing all these other drugs that, you know, I never did much of, and it just destroyed me. And I remember I got arrested 2 days after my 18th birthday, and I detoxed in jail from 120 milligrams of methadone. Like, by this time, I didn't know what rehab was. And I wound up on probation, and I'm not going to talk about using much more. That was my story. I ended up in jails, and I made my way to my first rehab in 2006. I was 18 years old, and I was homeless. My family turned their back on me. You know, I had nobody but myself, and I didn't know how to live life. And I found my first rehab when I was 18. I was on probation, and I had nowhere to go after rehab. I didn't know what to do, so they told me to go to a halfway house. And I wound up in Johnstown in 2006 and went to the halfway house out in Johnstown. But I was so young, man, and I didn't really want to be clean. Like, I wanted to be clean, but I didn't want to change. Like, I didn't want to change any of my behaviors. I still stole. I still had street mentality. I fought with everybody. Like, I remember my first meeting was the Thursday night kiss meeting, and I sat in the back, and I talked the whole meeting, and I chanted, and, like, made fun of the readings, didn't reach out, nothing. And, like, in the halfway house, you have to get a sponsor if you want to step up. So I thought I needed to get a sponsor that had clean time. I didn't know about getting a sponsor that actually worked spiritual principles and worked recovery. So I got this sponsor, and to this day, I'm like, I can't believe, like, I ever, you know, now that I know what recovery is and is about, like, I would have never picked her as a sponsor. And I'm, like, grateful for her, but, like, I didn't stay clean, you know what I mean? I didn't have the best sponsor in NA. And so I, like, 2.5 months into the halfway house, I got kicked out for fighting. I went to meetings, but like I said, I sat in the back of the meetings. I picked out all the differences. I was like, I didn't do that, so I'm not you. I didn't do that. Like, I didn't accept that I was an addict. And I picked out all the differences. I was 18. Everybody was older than me. I didn't feel like I belonged. Like, I just wanted my family off my back. That's all I wanted, was people to get off my back. And, you know, I stayed in Johnstown. One of the worst things I did was get into a rehab romance, man. I met a guy in rehab, and I got in a relationship, two newcomers in a relationship. I didn't know what a healthy relationship was. It was controlling. It was, like, horrible, man. And it was cheating and lying. It was, like, but I didn't want to be alone anymore, you know? I didn't want to be alone. I never felt wanted my whole life, and finally I felt wanted. And, like, I had the worst perception on it. I had the worst perception on what a relationship should be. And so I got into this relationship, and it was horrible, man. And I remember he cheated on me, and I didn't know how to handle that because, like, I was working step one, but I wasn't honest in my step work. I was writing what I wanted you to know. I wasn't writing what I needed to write or what God had me write. Like, at the time, I was raised Catholic. I was resentful towards God. Like, I thought, I played the, like, why me, why me, why me. Instead of saying why not me, I always said why me. And I was so resentful, man, and I didn't even know what resentments were. I didn't know what spiritual principles were. I had no idea what life was because I've never lived it before. And so that was my first rehab. And eventually, like, that boyfriend cheated on me, and I felt like something was wrong with me. So what did I do? I went home and I got high. And I was that addict who came back to Johnstown and chaired a meeting and pretended that I was clean. And I remember, I shared this story. I was like, I had the needle in my hand, I had the dope in my hand, but I didn't put it in me. Everybody saw right through me. Everybody. And this was my first retreat. I was here in 2006. I was with that same guy. And I'm going to share this story because this is how much I've grown in my recovery. Like, we found that little Boy Scouts tower, and we had sex at the top of the tower, and people walked up and caught us. And I thought that was cool. Like, I thought it was cool to do that stuff, you know. I wasn't here for recovery. I wasn't here to hear the message, you know. I was here because they dragged me here. I was miserable. I wasn't working steps. I did everything wrong. I didn't take suggestions. Like, whatever suggestion you told me to do, I did the opposite. And eventually, I found myself back home, back to using, you know, going back and forth from jail to rehab. I mean, when it was all said and done, I ended up in 6 rehabs, 2 halfway houses, 2 three-quarter houses, and outpatient a dozen times. And I ended up in jail 9 times. And this last time I got clean, I was on probation, and I got in trouble again because I couldn't stop using. I mean, I overdosed and stopped breathing for 7 minutes and came back to life. And if that wasn't God, I don't know what it was. But you'd think that would have scared me, but it didn't. Like, I felt invisible. I felt invincible. I was like, the drugs aren't going to take me. Nobody's going to stop me. I'll never get clean. I was suicidal. I was hopeless. And I kept using, man, and I remember this last time I got in trouble, and my PO said to me, she says, you have 2 weeks to go to rehab, or you're doing 23 months in the county jail. And I didn't want to go to jail, man, so I got myself into rehab, and I was the model client in rehab. I went to every group, like, something happened, man, and I wanted to be clean, and I went to every group, and I got one of those best friends in rehab where we had all this stuff in common, but, like, my story was always bigger than yours, you know. I always wrecked more cars, and I've never wrecked a car in my life. I've always used more, you know. I always had to top your story, you know what I mean? And but something happened, and I was like, I forget what they call it, but you take roll and all that stuff, like your senior client or whatever they called it. And I convinced them that I didn't need a halfway house. So I was like, I know what to do. I've been in and out of recovery. And I made it to rehab. I was 24 when I made it to rehab. And that's how long it took me. It took me till I was 24 to really, like, listen. And I got out, and I went to a meeting, but my thing was, is that girl I met in rehab that lived not far from me, like, I called her, and I was like, hey, what are you doing? We went to a meeting together, and she was using that day, so what did I do? They always say when opportunity meets desire, you're going to use, and opportunity met desire, and I used. But the only thing I did right, the only thing that stuck to me was keep coming back. And I went to a meeting. I had no car, no license. I was on probation. I was unemployable, and I was living at home, man. And I found my way to my first meeting. It was the Wednesday night hugs group, and I was messed up, man. I was crying. I was high. I went to the meeting high. And I was sharing that shit, and I was, like, crying and asking for help. And I remember, and I'll never forget this, this is how spiritually that I was. I was like, I don't care if you're a guy or a girl, please give me your phone number, because all a guy has to offer me is their dick, and I don't want it. And that's how sick I was. And I shared, man. I don't remember anything I shared, but I remember a couple people that were there. And they passed around this phone number list. And this lady introduced herself. And meanwhile, I'm like 24, and everybody's like in their 30s and 40s. And I didn't see any young ones. But, like, I remember what they told me. And they said, stick with the winners. Stick with the winners. If you really want to be clean, stick with the winners. And this lady came up to me, and she introduced herself and showed me her name on that list. And I called her. She was the only person I called. I called her, and she took me to a meeting, man. But I used every day I went to a meeting. I must have picked up for the first 3 weeks, I went to a meeting every day. I used that morning and went to a meeting at night because I wanted recovery. I just couldn't stop. I didn't know how to stop. And finally, I was like, something's got to give. And I went every day, man, picked up white key tag after white key tag after white key tag. And I said, this is it, God. Like, please help me. And I called outpatient, and I said, please, please, you know, take me. And they were like, why shouldn't we send you to rehab again? I was like, listen, I don't need rehab. I just need help. And I said, give me a chance. And I went to outpatient from 9 to 4 every single day because I had no structure in my life, none whatsoever. I didn't have a job. I went crazy. I read that basic text so much. I read all the IPs. I read the It Works How and Why. Like, my mind wouldn't stop racing, man. Early in recovery, my mind wouldn't stop racing. And, like, I didn't know what to do. I had no idea. So I read and I read and I read. And I went to outpatient from 9 to 4. And I remember, like, I was dope sick. Laying on that outpatient floor, dope sick. Went to a meeting every day, dope sick. And I went to this H&I workshop. And I remember it was like my second day clean. I was sick. And I was like, they told me if I went there, I would stay clean. So I went there, and I was miserable, man. And they told me, like, this guy said, eat this meatball hoagie, and it'll take away your dope sickness. So I took that suggestion. I ate a meatball hoagie. And, like, I was trying to do, like, I knew I didn't want to live that way anymore. And I knew I was going to die. And, like, I threw my hands up and I said, what can I do? Like, and they told me some simple things. Follow suggestions. Get a sponsor. Look for the similarities, not the differences. Get a home group. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. So, I started calling those phone numbers, man. Started calling those phone numbers. I would go to outpatient from 9 to 4, come home, call those phone numbers, get a ride to a meeting. I made it to, like, 2 meetings a day. I went to the other fellowship sometimes, but, like, I made it to a meeting every day with no car, no license, and, like, I live in the outskirts of Greensburg, and all these people that I had their phone numbers lived in Greensburg. They would drive from Greensburg to Delmont to pick me up, back to Greensburg for a meeting, back to Delmont, and back to Greensburg with no gas money because I didn't have it to give. And they told me, do it for somebody else someday. And I made it. They took me out to eat, and they paid for me. And, you know, they kept me in the... I was told if you get in the middle, you'll never fall off. And I wanted involved. I was like, what can I do, man? What do I have to do to stay clean? And they said, change. You have to change some things. You have to do some things differently, and it's going to be uncomfortable. And I said, okay. I said, okay, just tell me what to do. And I remember I got this sponsor, man, and, you know, I started working my first step. I had, like, 30 days clean. I was working my first step, and I was writing, I was writing, I was writing. And, like, I was still getting Klonopin, and I was selling them, and I was still talking to those old people. And I would go to a meeting, people would ask me how I was, and I'd be like, I'm miserable. I couldn't understand why I was so miserable. And I was still talking to those same people that I used with and still selling drugs and justifying it because I wasn't taking it. And I remember, man, I would tell my sponsor every time I did it, and she said to me, she said, what does recovery mean to you? And I really had to think about that question. And she said, I suggest that you change your clean date. And I flipped out. I cussed her out. I was like, I didn't put anything in me. And she said, well, what, you're taking something and putting it in somebody else. Like, what does being clean do you mean? I was stealing, I was lying, I didn't know how to be honest. And so I thought about that. And I really thought about that question. I said, you know what, like, being clean means to change and live by spiritual principles. And, like, I changed my clean date. My clean date is December 29th, 2010. I've told the truth to the best of my ability since then. I stole one time. I had, like, 10 months clean, and I stole this little thing. And, like, that's okay. I fall short sometimes. I haven't broke the law. I passed every drug test for my PO, and she released me from probation when I had 6 months clean. I got my license back, and I got a car, and I was able to give other people rides to meetings. And I started, sharing honestly, and, I raised my hand for the first 90 days and shared how bad I wanted to use, because I prayed every day for that obsession to go away. And, one day, I don't know when it happened, but one day I woke up and I didn't want to get high anymore. And I started, doing some things around here. I started, putting some action into it and started taking suggestions. And I stuck to the people that had a year or more clean and that were working on spiritual principles. And I stuck with the women. And thank God, man, they always say, don't get with the newcomers or stay out of a relationship. It says in the basic text, relationships can be a very painful area. And I had experience with that, and I didn't want a relationship. I needed to work on myself. So I started, working step one and writing on it. And then, I moved on to step two. And when I was on step two and I talked about insanity, I was like, I don't know what's sane and what isn't, because my whole life I've been believing my own lies and doing the same things over and over again that I couldn't tell the difference between sanity and insanity. And then, when I got to my third step, cause somebody told me step work was where that was the program. I'm in a 12-step program, and if you want to change, it's going to happen through the steps. So I figured I'd give it a try. And I got to my third step, man. And before I worked my third step, I was still struggling with the higher power thing. And my sponsor made me write down how my higher power worked in my life today. And, I have physical evidence. I would write this stuff down. And finally, I got the concept of a higher power. And then I got to my third step, man, and, turning my will over. I didn't know what was my will and what wasn't. And I was told everything after but is your will. And I said, okay, I can live with that. So I started praying, and I said the third step prayer. And then when I got done with my third step, the sponsor I had at the time moved. And I was forced to get another sponsor. So I just picked this girl because I needed a sponsor. And I didn't connect with her. I did not connect with her at all. She was the last person I called. I didn't want to tell her my secrets, nothing like that. So, I was at the convention, and I do that stuff. I go to conventions. I go to retreats. And I was at the convention, and I had this dream that I asked this woman to be my sponsor. And I texted her at the convention and asked her to be my sponsor. And she took me on, and this November will be a year. And, I started writing my four-step down, and I realized, wow, I'm not as bad as I thought I was, but I'm not as good as I could be. And, I started writing all this stuff down, things I never thought I would tell anybody. And then in step four, it tells you to write your assets. And, I didn't think I had any, because I couldn't see what you seen, because I was so hard on myself. And I started writing my assets down. And then, I did step five, and went over that with my sponsor. And like, accepted that I had some work to do and took that inventory of myself and, like, admitted my wrongs. And then, like, when I got to my sick stuff, I was like, man, I don't have any, there's nothing wrong with me. It's all you. I have no defects. And, like, I really believe that. I had no clue when I got to my sick stuff that the opposite of character defects were spiritual principles. I didn't know that. So, like, I started, like, thinking about it and praying about it and writing down these defects. And I heard JJ speak earlier, and he talked about, like, how they get magnified. And I'm writing this stuff down, and I'm noticing myself doing these defects. And, like, one of my big ones was inconsideration. Like, I would say stuff to you, and I would mean it in a loving and caring way. But the way it came out was so offensive and, like, hurt people's feelings. And, like, I didn't know how to share with somebody one-on-one in a loving, caring way. And, like, I started writing down these spiritual principles, and now when I act on a defect, I'm able to practice the spiritual principle. And then I did my seventh step, man, and, you know, humbly asked him to remove my shortcomings. And I fall short every day. It's an six and seven are going to be an ongoing process. Some of them are going to be removed. Some of them are, more of them will be revealed. Like, it's an ongoing process. It's an action step, and I have to work on that every day. So, about 4 days ago, I went over my eighth step with my sponsor, and I made my list. And I had all these people on my list, institutions, all this stuff on my list. And, like, we're going over my list, and she's like, cross that one off, cross that one off, put a question mark beside that one. And, like, most of the people on my list were revealed to me in my fourth step. Like, in my fourth step, when I wrote my resentments down, all my resentments were towards people that harmed me. But then, like, in my fourth step, I learned what part I played. Like, I had a part to play in most of those resentments. And most of those resentments were on my eighth step. And, like, I had to learn forgiveness. Like, if I, like, some harm has been done to me, but I've also done some harm back. You know, and I learned that through my eighth step. And, like, I had to, like, write down these people as much as I didn't want to make amends. But, like, most of them were ongoing amends. Like, people seem, over the past year, almost 2 years, like, they've been seeing change in me. And most of them talk to me now. So, like, right now, like, I made my first amends the other night, and I cried like a baby, man. It was to my uncle, and I cried, and I cried, because it was coming from my heart. Because I said, I'm sorry so many freaking times when I was early, in, like, 6 years ago. That's all that came out of my mouth. I'm sorry, I'll never do it again. I want to change. Every time I tried to get clean, my famous words were, it's different this time. And, like, nothing changed. Nothing. I did the same things I've always done. And, like, so this time, like, I put some action behind my words, and I wanted to live the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And I learned from my predecessors. And I started looking for all the similarities. So I made my first amends off my list. And I cried like a little baby. And when I said I'm sorry, I meant it. And, like, they hugged me and said they were proud of me. And I hope they all go like that. But what my sponsor told me in my ninth step is, when I go into amends, don't go into it with any expectations. Because if I go into it with an expectation and I'm let down, like, I'm only hurting myself. And I have to learn that, like, because that's when I get let down, is when I put expectations on things. But, like, I look at from the time, like, I wish I would have got this when I was 18, but that's not my story. Like, this is a process. And, like, this is a process that I have to go through. I don't do everything right, But, like, I go to meetings to identify with the newcomer and identify with my predecessors. And, like, I reach out to the newcomers because I remember what it was like when I was new. And, like, I offer rides with no gas money and drive out of my way even when I don't want to. And I answer the phone when I really, like, look at that number and I'm like, you know, and like I answer that phone anyway, and like, you know, I work steps and I take suggestions and I sponsor girls, and like I must have sponsored like 6 or 7 girls, and like they're all not here. I have one sponsee right now who's actually taking suggestions, and they're gonna come and go. And like when I make amends to my mom, this is what I can share. I can never give back my mom those sleepless nights and those times she worried about me and when she thought, didn't know if I was alive or dead. I can never give that back to her. But, like, I have experience with that now because I have friends that have gone back out and I know what it's like to worry about them. And I know what it's like never to hear from them and wonder if they're okay. Like, I remember that pain and misery. And, like, I remember my last day using and how embarrassing it was. And, like, I keep that fresh in my mind because I remember that gift of desperation. And, like, getting clean at 24, like, I'm so grateful because I have the rest of my life ahead of me. And, like, you know, I recently signed up for school and classes started last week. And like JJ said, like, it was suggested to me, use your instructor like you use your sponsor. Sit in the front of the class. Ask for help. Use your books like you use your literature. Like, apply the spiritual principles that you learn in school in recovery in school. You know, and that's what I do. And I work. I work part-time and I'm accountable and, like, I get paid to be there. Like, they trust me. They gave me a key to the place to lock up and set the alarm. Like, before, nobody would have gave me a key to anything. And, like, I have a car today and I give rides and I still go to 4 meetings a week. And, you know, I don't take this for granted. I took so much for granted when I got here. I was so ungrateful. And, like, a grateful heart will never use, and I believe that. And I keep my gratitude. And I practice my gratitude outside the rooms, and I do selfless acts. And, you know, like, I'm just, like, truly blessed. And to be able to go to meetings and work and, like, practice the spiritual life, like, living the program is all I can ask for, man. And it is one of the most rewarding programs. Like, when I got here and those key tags said clean and serene, I don't know about you, but at 30 days clean, I surely wasn't serene. And, like, all I wanted was a peace of mind. I wanted to be able to take a shower and enjoy it. Not like with all this shit running through my head. Like, I wanted to be able to sit down and enjoy the moment. And, like, I lived in the past and projected in the future. I was never in the moment. And now I can honestly say, through step work, I can live just for today. Because I did it while I was using. I don't know about you, but when I was using, I lived for the moment. Who was I going to rob? How was I going to get high today? And I practiced that same principle today in my recovery. And, you know, I just do things differently this time, and I take suggestions. And all my friends are in their 30s and 40s. Who'd have thought? I don't have to hang out with, like, 24-year-olds to be cool. I don't have to have friends my age to, like, I have the greatest friends that a girl can ask for that are there for me no matter what and don't expect anything out of me but another day clean. That's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you for speaking, Jim. I'd like to introduce the second speaker, Rob H., from the Lunchtime in Laurelboro group of NA in the NEASNA area of NA. Maybe Rob.
I'm Rob, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Rob.
Queen's 8, 11, 2, 10. That's in the asthma. You know, we're pretty awesome. Just want to throw that out there.
Just
trying to explain it, you know? That's my ego, you know? What would I be without that? I don't know, man. I never know what I'm going to say. Like, I'm always sitting up here, like, afraid what I'm going to sound like. I'm listening to John, and I'm like, man, I can't follow that. You know, like, I'm sitting here, and, like, my distorted thinking is, like, you just need to just say, okay, done, close it, and leave. You know what I mean? Like, the reality is that, like, I do have something to offer today. And, like, I have learned that through step work. And I'm going to start sharing where I'm at, and hopefully God kicks in, like, we see what happens, you know? It's always a surprise. I don't know, I was nervous speaking for this. I had to take a day off work. I usually double at work today, so, you know, I get to go in and get paid to play, like, PS3 and kickball and basketball with little adolescents that, like, you know, are trying to get clean, too. So it's like, you know, I was kind of reflecting on that while I was sitting here, like, where I was at, you know. I was, like, thinking about the topic, like, youth and recovery, and I kept asking people, like, am I youth and recovery? Because, like, I work with youth, you know, they're, like, 13 through 19, so I'm, like, am I really a youth? Like, I got clean when I was 22, you know what I mean? My clean date was 11 to 10, so I was 22 when I got clean. But I started using as a youth, man. Like, I started using when I was 9 years old. Like, I started drinking for the first time when I was 9. Like, we used to go steal chromies. Anybody know what that is? Like, little chrome caps you put on the tires. You know, if yours were stolen back in the day, it was probably me. Like, you know? Because, like, I was little, and that was the cool thing to do, is, like, go steal these chromies. And, like, my brothers, they were older, 4 years older than me. They started drinking beer on that time. And, like, I remember being in a bush, man, and, like, hiding, because, like, I thought, like, as soon as you touched the car, like, the cops showed up. So, like, my thing was, as they were doing that, like, I was hiding in the bushes, like, drinking beer, you know? Like, I'm, like, 9 years old, and I remember taking, like, a sip of a beer, and every sip I took, like, wanting to throw up, because it was, like, terrible. Like, every sip, man, just wanting to, like, throw up, and, like, just forcing myself, and, like, not even knowing why, like, no explanation, like, still can't give you one to this day, besides, like, I'm a drug addict, you know? But, so, like, I'm sitting there drinking, and, like, I don't know, man, like, 9 years old drinking beer, like, who would have thought, you know? Followed off by, like, years of drug abuse, like, you know, started doing pills when I was like 10, started smoking weed. Like, I was ass backwards. I started like harder drugs and went to the softer ones and then back to the hard ones, you know? I grew up, we grew up real poor, man, you know? When I was 3 years old, my mom left my dad. My mom's not a U.S. citizen. She's from England. So when I was 3, she met my brother in the military. He beat her, molested my sister. So we left when I was 3, we went to England. It was 4 of us, me, my 2 twin brothers that are 4 years older, and my sister that's 6 years older than me. And we lived in a 1-bedroom apartment in England until I was like 5 or 6. You know, we slept in one room together, my mom slept on the floor. She met my stepdad, we moved to PA, and you know, we struggled growing up, and we didn't have much. Like, I remember for Christmas getting, like, a pair of socks and, like, sweatpants, you know what I mean? Like, that was Christmas, and, like, I didn't know any better. I know I hated other kids that came to school talking about what they had. I used to sit there like, son of a bitch. Like, I just wanted to beat them up and take their shit, you know? So I started doing that. Like, that's how I got things, you know what I mean? Just, like, a couple of us got together. That's what we did, man. We, like, stole, we robbed. And, like, in the meanwhile, man, like, I got involved in sports. Like, I started wrestling, started playing football when I was, like, 7. Wrestled all through high school, played football all through high school. Like, you know, I used all through high school, man. Like, I ran, I sold drugs, like, I did rehabs. Like, I did my first rehab when I was 13 years old. I got put in an outpatient one-on-one facility where the lady told me I was cured. That was fun. Because I found sports and I had a girlfriend at 13. So I didn't have to use again.
Wow.
I remember her telling me, like, that was my motivation to stay clean.
Awesome.
So, like, that didn't work out. I did keep playing sports, though, man. Like, as a freshman, too, like, I was pretty good. Like, I had some D1 schools come down scouting me as a freshman. You know what I mean? A couple of scholarship offers by the time I was a sophomore, a junior, senior year. there was a couple D3 schools on the table. That was it, because my drug use just took me to a point where I stopped lifting, stopped doing that. I was just trying to play off a straight raw ability, which, like, turns out, like, I didn't have so much of that. It was, like, the hard work that I put in before, you know? So by then, like, I did multiple rehabs, outpatients, did some pain, did some consequences. I decided to go to the military because, like, my whole family's in there. Thought it would be a good idea. Thought it was going to cure me. So I went to the military, did that for 3.5 years. Military, please, too. I was like the dirtiest cop ever. It was a terrible idea. And they're getting kicked out, man. So, you know, it turns out, like, after you fail 6 drug tests, they don't want you no more. So they kick you out, you know, and I fought it, and I got a general under honorable. I like bounce around. I don't really like talking too much about my past. Like, the only thing you can identify that, like, I, you know, it's obvious, man. I used because, like, I wasn't okay with who I was. Like, I didn't know who I was. You know what I mean? Like, how could I? Like, I started using at a young age. Like, I always felt different, not having a father. You know what I mean? Being poor, not fitting in. You know, I can think of 1,010 reasons why I felt different. But the bottom line, what it was, man, is I felt different. I didn't feel the same as you guys. Like, I felt left in. There was, like, something about me that I didn't like, and I was afraid, like, if you found it out, that you wouldn't like me either. So, like, I put, like, all these different masks on. So, like, it talks about it in, like, the Just for Today's and the basic text about, like, the masks we wear to, like, protect ourselves from who we truly are. Like, I walked around wearing those masks for years, but, like, a young age, too, man. Like, if you sold drugs, like, shit, me, too. Like, if you got high, like, I did, too. Like, you played sports, like, me, too. Like, anything you did, like, you know, I was a natural chameleon. Like, I could blend in and do whatever you did, man. Like, that's how I lived my life, but, like, a life of, like, suffering, pain, misery, regret. You know what I mean? Like, didn't know who I was, didn't like myself for who I was. Like, I've gotten kicked out of rehabs for smashing mirrors, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I've done some messed up things in my addiction, man. Like, right before I got clean, like, I've overdosed from this disease. Like, I've died from this disease, you know what I mean? I've hurt some people. You know, I abused physically, mentally, spiritually, and sexually a girl, drug her through active addiction with me, through hell and back. You know, introduced her into a life that she may have not known if it wasn't for me. And, like, I know today I can never force somebody to use, but, like, I have to recognize the part that I play in it, you know? And, like, I remember my godmother. I have this godmother. She's a 76-year-old black lady. You know, anybody's ever seen, like, Madea? You know, like, Madea? She's like Madea, you know? And she'd whoop my ass up and down. Like, always tell me, like, find God, 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 God. You know what I mean? And I was like, fuck God. You know? Like, that dude doesn't like me, and I don't like his ass neither. So, like, I didn't, yeah, that wasn't going to work for me. But she ended up dying of breast cancer. And I didn't know this then, but I do know this now. Right before she died, like, 8 hours before she died, the last thing she said to my mom was to get me in a rehab and away from the girl that I was with, and that I would get and stay clean. And I didn't know that then. I do now, though. So she died, man. And, like, I went to a funeral, and for, like, the first time, like, something started changing in me. You know what I mean? Because I did rehabs in the past. I did meetings where I just thought you guys spiked coffee and got drunk. And I was like, these people fucking smiling. What the hell is that about? Like, who smiles? You know what I mean? And, like you like yourself? Like, what? You're crazy. So, like, I did all that. She passed away. I remember going to her funeral the night before her funeral. Like, no, and this is my story for me, man. Like, if you can't relate, like, I'm sorry. And if you can, like, great, you know. But, like, it's my story. It's the only way I know how to tell it. I remember sitting on the bed, man. I'm like, I did have that crack pipe in this hand, and, like, the pen in this hand, and, like, every ounce of me not wanting to use, but, like, seriously, like, can't stopping myself. Like, I couldn't stop myself using. You know what I mean? And I ended up shooting up and getting high at the same time. My mom comes in, like, a couple hours later. I'm like, there I am, laying on the ground in the middle of a fallout, like, trying to pick myself back up to the chair, my mom walking in. And me and my sponsor always talk about moments of clarity, you know what I mean? An active addiction, we have moments of clarity. And here I am, loaded out of my mind and having a moment of clarity. My mom walks in with Gladys, as her name, obituary, and starts reading it to me, and then it turns out to be my obituary. She starts reading it like it was mine, tells me, and I'm dead to her, that she's going to bury me. And I heard that. In the midst of being fucked up and, you know, so messed up, like, I heard what she was saying to me, and it was like, you know, my son's dead to me, like, you're nothing, like, go die, you know, do the family a favor. I don't know if anybody's ever had that done, but, you know, your family telling you that you're nothing and that you should just go die, like, I don't care how fucked up you are, that's gonna break through sometime, man. And it did. And I ended up going to rehab one last time, and of course the day came to go to rehab, and my brother showed up to get me. My brother Chad, he's a pretty big dude. He's an Army Ranger, did 2 tours in Afghanistan, 1 tour in Iraq. And my sister's ex-husband was a football player, so like, here I am, 145 pounds. Stone cold junkie. You know, like when I was a junkie, it was like walking past cars, seeing my reflection, being like, damn, I look good. You know? Meanwhile, like having showered for 2 weeks, like tore up, like homeless, like not smelling the greatest, you know what I mean? Like, and I was living in the crack house at the time. One of the apartments I had turned into a crack house. And so my brothers come in, and, you know, they're telling me I'm going to rehab, and there's me, 145 pounds, and they're trying to fight these 2 dudes. It didn't turn out so well. I ended up going to rehab with, like, a bag of clothes and, you know, 2 black guys, and, like, thought it was a great idea. So, like, I go to rehab, man, and, like, it didn't feel like I belonged, didn't want to get clean. Like, you know, none of you guys could relate to me. Number one, none of you were my age. You know what I mean? You're all, like, 30, 40, 50, 60, like to me, you're already dead. What's the point? You know what I mean? So, like, I'm sitting there, like, what the hell? You know? And so, like, I'm in rehab, and I got, like, when I thought then, my opinion's changed now, but when I thought then, like, these old timers trying to tell me something, like, they fucking knew what they were talking about, you know? Like, guys sitting there, like, man, you need to get this. I'm like, dude, you're sitting beside me. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? Not wanting to hear anything anyone had to say, man. Like, it went on like that through detox, man. Like, I threw one of the staff in the wall. I'm, like, punching the mirrors. Like, I couldn't even brush my teeth for the first 3 weeks in rehab. Literally, because I couldn't look in the mirror, man. Like, I couldn't. Cause, like, I remember this kid that I was. And then I remember looking up in the mirror to brush my teeth in rehab and not knowing who the hell I was looking at. Like, I seen a reflection, but I didn't know it. I couldn't identify with it. I couldn't identify with that, like, empty shell of a man standing there with nothing behind my eyes, you know? I couldn't identify with that, man. And it infuriated me. And the only way I knew how to act out was, 1, get high, or 2, flip out and hurt somebody. And so, like, that's what I started doing, man. And, like, you know, I call my dad, and I'm like, hey, I'm leaving. I'm like, he's like, are you going to get high? No. I'm good this time. Like, I'm in detox doing it. He's like, oh, I'm not getting you. He's like, you even know where to go. He's like, you know, your mom's putting a PSA on you. Your sister's got kids. They don't want you. Your brothers can't stand you. He's like, you ain't got nowhere to go, dude. He's like, if you want to walk, more power to you. You know what I mean? And I'm, you know, like, whatever. And so I decided to stay. I talked to some other tech. Decided to stay. I got the inpatient. Had my backpack for like the first week in inpatient, right? Because, like, again, you people don't know what the hell you're talking about. And the counselors, they're just reading out of a book. So, like, they were wrong. And so, like, I went to a church service on Sunday. And, like, I heard a passage from the Bible. Again, my story for me, you know what I mean? And I heard something that clicked. I don't know why it came from the Bible. I never really read it, you know what I mean? I didn't like it. I couldn't relate to God at the time. But that's where it came from for me. Like, that was something that I heard. And it was like his passage. It was like he lifted me out of the mire and mud, placed me on solid ground, gave me a firm place to stand. And like for some reason, man, like that clicked for me. I'm like, I'm not saying like I'm a religious nut or anything like that, but at that point in time, I heard exactly what I needed when I needed to hear it. You know what I mean? And I went upstairs and I started talking out loud to Gladys first. And then like what I know now is I started talking to God. And that was November 7th. I got clean November 2nd. So it was like 5 days later. Yeah. No. Yeah. And I have not had an obsession to use drugs since that day. I haven't. I can't tell you what it's like to get an obsession clean and not used because I've never had an obsession since I've been clean. Maybe I will, but to this day I haven't. That's just my story, man. Like, I've had fleeting thoughts, you know what I mean? Like, I've connected memory with memory, and, like, I'm sure that, like, somewhere in my mind it sounded like a good idea, but then, like, it automatically goes out, man. Like, I don't know. Like, I can't sit here and tell you what it's like to sit there and be completely obsessed to use drugs. And I'll do it. I know it's obsessed to use other things. I'll get to that. But you know, to use my drug of choice or anything like that. Like, just have it, man, since I got clean. So, like, I came out, and I had nowhere to go, man. I had 30 days clean. And I used all my funding at that point. They had to kick me out of the rehab. Not kick me out, but I was on a scholarship there. I did 7 days of, or 3 days of detox, and I went straight to inpatient. They were only going to give me 10 days total. At 10 days, I had no funding. I used all the state funding, all the federal, all the county, all the assistance. Like, I used everything I could previously for all the other rehabs I went to. So this was, like, my last chance, man. They gave me a scholarship. The company I work for now, actually, gave me a scholarship to stay longer. And I did, and I got every bit I could out of it, and I soaked it in. And I did, like, they challenged me not to talk for 24 hours. I did it. I didn't talk for 24 hours. They told me to stop swearing. I went 7.5 months without saying the curse word. I met all their little challenges, and then everything they tried to tell me to do, and except for something, you know? So I get out of rehab, I have nowhere to go, and my sister's like, you can stay here for a couple of days, that's it, you gotta go. So I go to her house, she calls one of her friends she went to school with, it was a recovering addict, he took me to a meeting. Went to a meeting and I was sharing about this and that and how I had such a spiritual awakening and how I'm a giant. I know everything I'm talking about and you should listen to me. And after the meeting, he says, if you would just shut the fuck up and do what you were told, he said, you could stay clean. And I'm like, who's this dude? You know what I mean? And I ended up being the dude that gave me a place to stay when nobody else would. He happened to run a recovery house, man, and moved me in. I had no money. I had a bag of clothes, nothing to offer anybody. He took me in, they gave me a place to stay, got me in the outpatient, got me assistant living, you know what I mean? And for the first 4 months of my recovery, man, I lived there for not a penny. I didn't have a penny to offer. I did what I could around the house. And, you know, they were the type that dropped me off the meeting and told me to find a ride home. You know what I mean? That you learn to ask for help, you humble yourself, you ask for cigarettes, you ask for rides, you ask for this, and you humble yourself and you allow other people to do for you what you can't do for yourself. Like, you learn to ask for help, man, because someday you need it. And I did. You know what I mean? And I wanted a cell phone. My mom said, you paid for it. And they said, absolutely not. You know what I mean? I got a sponsor and I said, I want to get a cell phone. He says, nope. And so I went 7 months without a cell phone. I wanted a car. He said, absolutely not. So I went a year or 9 months without a car. Whatever they told me to do, I did. Because, like, I was so fearful going back there and dying, man. Like, because today I know for me, like, to use is to die. Like, it's real simple. If I put anything in me, like, I'm dead. Instantly. Been there, done it. I know the story, man. I don't care how old I am, how old I'm not, how old somebody else is. For me, to use any type of substance will kill me instantly. And I'm talking, like, spiritually first, man. Because once my spirit dies, then the body just follows. You know what I mean? Like, I know that today. And so I did all these things they told me, except stay away from the newcomer. Like, because I was new, so, like, it wasn't bad if I hooked up with another newcomer. So, like, here I am with 60 days. This girl got 30 days. That's what everything she wanted to hear. I had sex with her, used her, left her for my recovery. She goes out, gets high, overdoses, dies, still out there running the street today because I couldn't be okay by myself. Like, I had to use other people because I wasn't okay with who I was. And I did that a couple of times. Like, just call it what it is, man. Like, I was, like, shark. I just went around because I was young. You know, I started looking good, a couple of days clean, girls like that. I exposed their weakness, and I took advantage of it, man. And I used them, and I abused them, I did everything I could. And I cost a couple of them their recovery, and I'm not proud of that, man, but that's my story. And, like you want to know what happens when you hook up with another newcomer, hooks up with another newcomer, that's what happens. Like, it's a miracle that I'm still clean today through shit that I've done. And it's really hard in recovery to live with the fact that you have something to do with somebody else losing their life, you know? Today, that still bothers me, man. Like, it's not okay. Like, it doesn't make it okay. Like, it's never okay for the shit that I did. Like, you know, sometimes people will tell me, like, it's okay. Like, you're clean. Like, that's not enough for me today, man. Like, it's not enough just to be clean today. Like, I don't come here just to stay clean. Like, that's not what I'm here for. Like, I'm not here to just put the drug down. Like, I'm here to be a better person. Like, I'm here to be something somebody can look up to, like a role model. Like, I can be an example by my actions, not my words. Like, I hate giving names because, like, I'm the type of dude, like, I can talk your ear off and I can make myself sound real good. But, like, reality is, like, you want to see what I'm like? Follow me home. Because, like, I try to live what I say, you know what I mean? And I try to be the best that I can. And I'm not ashamed for what I've done. I'm not ashamed for what I do. Because I am human, I do fall short. But it doesn't give me an excuse to act like an asshole. Like, if you want to know how I live, follow me home, man. Because you'll see me help the newcomer. You'll see me work on myself. You'll see me fall short and act out. But you'll also see me find some remorse. You'll see me pray to my higher power. You'll see me be involved in service. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I was fortunate enough, man, to, like, the three recovery house that I moved into, like, I manage it today. I work at Adolescents Drug and Alcohol Behavioral Rehab for teens, you know, it's inpatient. I get to do that, man, so, like, I get to help people. Like, I was taught, like, you help the newcomer, like, you give back to the fullest. I'm like, you know, there's a lot of guys my age coming in the rooms, man, and, like, I'm, you know, God obviously put me here for a reason because, like, I get to help them every day, and, like, they help me too, you know, and, like, they're my age, and, like, they can relate, like, and I had that when I came in because my buddy who helped me was 22 years old, you know what I mean, and, like, today he has 4 years clean, and I'm coming up, or he's coming up on 4 years, and I'm coming up on two. And, like, we're both young, man, and we get to, like, be an example for young men coming into this program. Like, not young women, because I ain't got shit to offer you. I'm not, sorry, I ain't got nothing for you. Like, I tried it, it didn't work, stay the fuck away from me, for real. Like, I ain't got nothing to offer, sorry. But, like, for young guys, man, like, I can show them, like, how I live. I can show them, like, the experience that I had, the mistakes I made, how I stayed clean through it. And, like, in recovery, man, I've got to experience a lot. Like, I've had guys die on me, man, and, like, I stayed clean through it. Like, I had a guy in my house I got to watch for, like, 9 months, get clean, stay clean, work a program. And all of a sudden, man, off of a feeling, he decided to go out. And the night before he died, I told him, like, I sat there and I was like, dude, if you go out and you get this, you are going to die. Like, you, I have this bad feeling. Don't, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to die, dude. Like, 8.5, like, not even 8 hours later, we got a phone call that he used and he died. Like, 8 hours of leaving our house, getting high, he died. I'm like, you know, I struggled with that for a minute. Like, you know, but you know what? Like, I told him the truth, man. Like, I told him the truth, what was going to happen based off of my experience. Like, you're going to die. I mean, I told him the truth. And, like, I hate to say this, man, but better anybody else but me. You know what I mean? Like, I hate to see people go back out. I hate to see people die. And I hate to see people stay loaded and get loaded. But, like, better them than me today, man. Because I work my ass off. Nothing comes before my recovery. Like, I will put my hand out as far as I can. But if you're jeopardizing my recovery, you're on your own, man. Like, if you're still getting loaded, you're on your own, man. Like, you want to get clean, stay clean, you can find me in a meeting. You can find me at my home group. You can find me at area service. You can find me, you know, doing my service work. Like, that's where you can find me at. Because on the street, on the set, in the crack houses, you know, in the bars, in the strip clubs, in the casinos, you won't find me there. I don't go there. I don't do that. Because, like, for me, that's playing on the train track, and all it comes is me getting loaded. You know what I mean? So, like, I try to tell the truth to the best of my ability. I don't try to hurt nobody. But I'm not going to sugarcoat it neither, because nobody did it for me, man. I call my sponsor every day. I'm on these dating websites, right? Because, like, don't want to date women in recovery. Bad experience. They're on these dating websites, and I'm like, you know, I'm telling, like, all these 21, 22-year-old girls are on there, you know, they're drinking. I'm like, it's okay, though. It's okay. You know what I mean? I'm like, so I call my sponsor. I'm like, you understand? I think I'm done with these dating websites. I think it's hindering my relationship with God. And he goes, shut up. He goes, shut up. He's like, you're retarded. I can't even listen to you. He's like, call me back when you make some sense. And he hangs up on me, man. I'm like, all I can do is laugh because he's right. Like, I'm just an idiot, you know what I mean? Like, I'm an idiot. Like, I do stupid stuff all the time. And, like, that's just me trying to fill a void. Like, obviously it's not going to work for me, man. I'm like, I'm self-willing. Like, what do you... Like, I've worked steps. Like, I know what self-will is today. Like, I know what I'm doing. Self-will. I'm like, it was funny though how he said it, you know. But recently, man, my sister got cancer. And I just, dude, it was the hardest case. I'm like, I have Hep C and stuff, you know? And so, like, I found out, like, I had Hep C, and I'm like, I'm gonna die, you know? And I called my sponsor, I'm like, I got Hep C, I'm gonna die. He's like, congratulations, dude. He's like, I believe you shot dope now. And I'm like, oh, man, like, it's awesome, you know? And he's like, no, seriously. He's like, you shot dope since you were, like, 13. And he's like, did you really think you weren't going to get anything from it? I'm like, I really thought I wasn't going to get anything. So, like, you know, like, I said, when my sister found out, you know, I tried talking to him, like, look, you know, like, I found out, like, I have Hep C, too. You know this. Like, you know, it's a struggle of mine, but, like, you know, I'll try to be there for you. And, like, she wanted me there, man. And, like, I was able to be there for her. And, like, so she had thyroid cancer, and they removed it, and it still was spreading, man. It went to her lymph nodes. It was going towards her lungs and her brain. I'm like, I was a hot mess, man. I was sharing about it. I'm like, I had to take her to her doctor's appointment. And so I leave a meeting right before, because I know today that, like, if I'm going to do something that, like, I don't feel very spiritually fit about, like, I hit a meeting first and then I go. You know, so I went to a meeting first in the morning. And then on my way down, like, I'm crying, man. I'm sitting in the car and, like, I'm bawling my eyes out. Like, I didn't know if I'm going to lose my sister. I'm questioning God. I'm fighting with God. I'm mother effing God. You know what I mean? Like, you know, this was a couple weeks ago. Because I'm sitting here thinking, like, all the shit that I did, why not me? Why her? Three kids, you know, single mother, living in the projects. Why's it got to be her? Why not me? What did I do so good that, you know? And, like, none of that matters, man. Like, it's not my place to ask why. You know what I mean? It's my place to ask what. Like, what can I give today? So, like, I start driving down there to go down there. I'm, like, crying my eyes out, man. And, like, on my way down, like, start laughing. I'm, like, crying, laughing, smiling, crying, laughing, smiling. And, like, for some reason, I'm like, why am I laughing and smiling? Like, I realized what it was, man. Like, I was grateful for the opportunity just to be there in my sister's life. And, like, all of a sudden, man, like, this calm just came over me. And, like, I just stopped. Like, I wasn't smiling. I wasn't laughing. I wasn't crying. I wasn't sad. I was just calm. Like, this around me just kind of came over me, man. And, like, for a moment, it was just like, everything's going to be all right. And, like, I go down there to a doctor's appointment, and the doctor starts talking to her. Like, I'm sitting in the room, just me and her now. Not anybody else in my family, just me and her. Like, being able to be there for her, you know? And the doctor says to her, she thinks there's a 1 in 10,000 chance that radiation stopped the spreading of your cancer. I'm like, it did. You know what I mean? I'm like, I got to be there for that, man, because, like, I've stayed clean and I've worked some spiritual principles and, like, I've been able to help enough people to, like, you know, build my spirit back up to where it should be. Not where I want it to be, but where it should be. And, like, it was a blessing, man. And, like, every day I get blessings like that. I just have to identify. I'm like, I'm a huge guy. I'm a gratitude junkie, man. And, like, my gratitude's not words. Like, I don't sit here and tell you everything I'm grateful for. Like, you want to know, you'll see, man. Because my gratitude speaks when a newcomer is tore up and they're leaving the meeting and nobody said anything to them yet. And I run down to their car and I say, where are you going? Get in my car. Let's go. We're going out to eat. You know what I mean? And I hold them hostage. I hold them hostage, man. I take them out to eat. Then after that, we go bowling. And then after that, they come to the house. And I make them take my number. And they're like, do you want my number? And I said, no, I'll get it when you call me. You know what I mean? And I hold them hostage the next day. You know what I mean? I see them at a meeting. I take them again, man. I'm like, and that's what somebody did for me, man. I didn't have an option. They were like, hey, you want to go to this retreat? We're going to have a spiritual retreat. Yeah, shut up and get in the car. You know what I mean? And they pushed me in the car, and we went, man. And, like, that's how I got it. Like, I didn't have a choice to participate. I was forced to because they told me if I didn't that I would die. That I would use and I would die. You know what I mean? Like, I can't push it. I don't care, like, man, like, if I'm young, if I'm old, like, we all have something to offer each other, man. Like, I'm so big on that. Like, one thing this program's taught me is, like, I am something today. You know what I mean? Like, I do have something to offer today. Like, I am that good, you know? Like, you know what I mean? Even if my ego gets a little too far, my self-centeredness everywhere, I can still step outside of myself and help someone, man. So I don't know, man, if you're new and you're young, like, there's people out there, like, that are your age and that are clean, all you gotta do is have the willingness to find them, like, reach out, get a sponsor, you know, go to the meeting, do 90 and 90, like, I started 90 and 90, ended up doing a 365, you know what I mean? Like, you know, the meeting takes care of itself if you just start doing the right thing. Like, you find things start lining up if you just start doing God's will, not your own. You know what I mean? Like, so again, like, if you're new, man, get involved, get service, like, sit down, like, shut up and do what they tell you, because, like, damn, it works. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why this shit works. I can't explain it, but it does. Like, all I have to do is just shut up long enough to hear it, and, like, I can find any solution I need. You know what I mean? That's all I have. Thanks for letting me.